You are listening to Conservation Corner on 99.5 FM, KTWH LP, Two Harbors, Minnesota. I'm your host, Emily Nelson, and today I'm here with Will Beaumier, who is our Area Resource Conservationist for the Natural Resources Conservation Service, or NRCS, and that is a department of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Today we're going to be talking about spruce budworm, and this past summer you may have noticed some little moths flying around your spruce or your balsam fir trees, and you may have wondered whether or not they might be spruce budworm. Will is going to teach us how to identify spruce budworm outbreaks, as well as what we can do about them. So good morning, Will, and thank you so much for being here with me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me come in to talk.
Can you start off by talking about what spruce budworm is?
Spruce budworm is a natural pest. It's not an invasive species. I know a lot of times when we have an outbreak and people start to see the trees that are impacted, we get a lot of questions about, you know, where did this come from, especially with emerald ash borer, gypsy moth, and some of the other pests that we have. But it's a native species. It's a part of our landscape and a part of the ecosystems here. But it is a lot like gypsy worm in that it has a couple of stages. It has a caterpillar or like a worm, that spruce budworm, kind of a worm-like phase. And then later in the year, it has a moth phase that it goes into, and that's how it spreads. Mm-hmm. So in a normal scheme of things, you know, a little bit more about the spruce budworm itself. It would have moved into these stands. It prefers balsam fir, so it's kind of funny that way, in that even though it's spruce budworm, it prefers balsam fir. And it would move into these thick stands of balsam fir. It will, after enough years, kill off the stand, and then we would have a disturbance like fire or wind or ice that would knock all the balsam fir that are dead out of the way, and the cycle would regenerate back with aspen and other sun-loving trees that would take its place. So that's a little bit about its life, a little bit into its life cycle and what it is.
Okay, and what do they look like?
What it looks like, it's like a little brown, when it's in the worm stage, it's a little brown about the size of maybe a safety pin. And it's just a real brown, nondescript looking worm on the edge of balsam fir. I was just out this morning with a landowner, and we actually were able to still see it on trees that have been defoliated. I would recommend the first time maybe taking a magnifying glass and looking at tree branches where the needles are kind of missing, especially at the tips. That's where they're impacted.
Okay.
And then later in the year, they're white moths. So people might remember this summer walking through the woods and there's all these white moths flying around, and that's actually spruce budworm in the moth stage.
I see. And what month does that usually occur?
It's usually later in the summer, like late June, July, okay, somewhere in there.
And what time of the year does the damage mainly occur?
Usually early in the spring. It seems like when the damage, you start seeing the damage, and into summer. You can actually go in heavily infested stands, you can actually hear them and watch the needles falling. So if you have a really thick stand of balsam fir. So.
What does it sound like?
Just like you would imagine gnawing insects, gnawing on wood. It's a real strange noise. So I always tell people, if you walk into those stands and you sit and be very quiet, it's kind of spooky.
Where has the infestation been this year?
Well, where we've seen it this year is very heavily impacting Lake County, pretty much from, you know, as you drive 61, you'll start to see it right away when you cross the Knife River, and then all the way up to just the other side of Two Harbors, and then all the way up Highway 2 as you head north. Mm-hmm. It's also impacting a lot of St. Louis County, South St. Louis County, anywhere in those, in that general area where there's a high concentration of balsams, we're seeing activity. And they kind of run on an interesting cycle. It's a 30 to 50-year cycle. So, you know, folks a lot of times will remember when this has happened before in the past. And it kind of moves up the shore. And so if you picture the coast of Lake Superior, it'll kind of move up the shore towards Cook County, and then we'll come back around the backside, and then back around again on that cycle. So it's a little bit interesting that way.
Yeah, that is interesting. So the DNR has been keeping track of infestations in Minnesota since the 1950s, and I've noticed that most of the infestations have been in northeastern Minnesota. Is spruce budworm generally limited to our region of the state?
Yeah, I mean, spruce budworm, the real outbreaks where we see infestations that have large impacts on the landscape do seem to be kind of a northeast Minnesota phenomenon or an Arrowhead phenomenon. To my knowledge, you know, so why would that be? You know, you get into Carlton County, there's balsam fir in Carlton County, but you don't really see large outbreaks like this. And I think it's because in this part of the world or this part of the state, you know, we have these large tracts of balsam fir, so there's just a lot of area for them to move through. And I'm sure there's other factors involved too, but
yeah. And then is it a bigger problem for people working in forestry or for homeowners?
I think it can be, you know, a little bit of both. You know, if you're in the business of managing managing forests and forestry, you know, keeping healthy trees that are going to be your product down the road are important. So you're losing that resource. But also for homeowners and those of us that just like to recreate in the woods, you know, there's a significant fire hazard that can be caused when these trees do die. So we strongly encourage folks, you know, if you had to focus on an area, if you've got structures that are around these trees, spruce budworm, it doesn't kill the tree right away. The balsam fir can take maybe 3 to 4 years of high-intensity spruce budworm activity before it actually kills the tree. So if you see this moving into your trees and you think you've got it, you do have a little bit of time to start working on getting those trees removed so that you can replace those with something better or something more resilient.
And then the infestations generally last 8 to 10 years, and so there's a good chance that trees will be subjected to more than they can handle, right?
Yep. Yep. And so then the question is, what do you, you know, one of the questions is, what do you do about spruce if you've got spruce and balsam? And we've been recommending that people, the spruce will generally come through a spruce budworm outbreak, not all of them, but a higher percentage of them. So we recommend that folks concentrate on the balsam fir right now. And even though your spruce may be getting defoliated, to let those go and see if they'll come through.
So where does the damage occur on the trees?
So where the damage occurs on the trees, where you start to see it at first is actually towards the top of the tree, the crown. So if you wonder if you have this, I mean, sometimes it can be very obvious because after they've been working on a tree for over a period of time, especially years, you'll see them down low at walking level or eye level. But if you kind of wonder initially, if you look up towards the top of balsam fir, they're the ones with the real pointy kind of candle top when you're driving down the road or out walking, that's where you'll see the needles start to disappear. So you'll just see the stem or the branch of the tree with no needles on it. And they kind of work on the top first. And that's another good thing to think about is they like to attack the tall trees first. So usually when you get down into the understory, down low close to the ground, they're not as active.
How can homeowners recognize that they have an infestation? And also, do all of the trees come under attack, or is it possible to just have a few trees that are affected?
Generally, if you have a high concentration of balsam fir, it will infect all of those trees. So if you find it on one tree, you're probably going to find it on multiple. You know, the best way to tell if you have this is if you start to see trees that are losing a high percentage of their needles, especially up towards the top, but even towards the bottom. Watch for the moths in the summertime. And sometimes those trees, you know, when you look at them from a distance, they just look an off color as they start to lose some of their needles. So
Do the needles ever turn brown, or is that something else?
That's something else. So it does look like a different color, but not like a brown, like when you have a Christmas tree that's old. It looks different than that. But primarily I would look for bare branches that used to have needles on them.
And what should people do if they have an infestation?
So if you have an infestation on your property, you know, if it's a thick balsam fir stand, you have to make a decision on, I mean, really the way to treat for this is to remove those balsam fir. And so you're going to have to take them down, and you can kind of do a lop and scatter where you get those into reasonable size pieces and drive over them with a piece of equipment, or, you know, get them down on the ground where they can rot and not become a fire hazard. Mm-hmm. And so that's one method. Or you can take them down and pile them. You can chip them. You can kind of haul them off site if they're still a merchantable and there's a lot of them. So really, the big thing to remember is you've got to remove them, and then your options come in when you, what do you do with all that woody residue that you have on the ground? And because it's so intensive, many landowners might find themselves having to prioritize which areas they're going to treat, because unless you're going to have a contractor or a logger that can come in and use that material, it kind of becomes cost and labor intensive.
Yeah. I read on the DNR's website that for people involved in forestry, if you have an infestation, it might be better to cut the trees down right away.
Yeah, because if you cut them down right away, your chances of, you know, if you think you've got this and you've still got good quality trees, there's a chance that a logger, you know, could utilize that product in a paper mill somewhere, or maybe even for other forest products. So that's where, if you think you've got this coming or you can see it coming and you can work with somebody, you might want to get on it sooner than later. So.
Okay, and if someone doesn't want to take their trees down for whatever reason, is there some kind of chemical or other treatment that people can use to suppress the budworm and prevent damage?
You know, I believe there are some. I'm not familiar with which ones. I know that they are, their effectiveness, I'm not sure of their effectiveness, and I know they're a lot of times cost prohibitive, other than maybe if you had a few trees in your yard or something like that you really wanted to save. So what we've been doing with folks, you know, is kind of the next thing I think about is, well, how can I prepare for this? And what can I do once I get the trees down so that this doesn't happen when they come back around in 30 years? Mm-hmm. And that's planning a diversity of species, you know, so managing your forest or the area around your house so that you can plant semi-shade tolerant species like even still white spruce, but yellow birch, maple, white pine. Of course, you have the deer browse issue that you have to deal with a lot of these trees, cedar, but then encouraging what's there. Sometimes when we go in there and we remove those balsams, we find that there's still an aspen component that can grow. There's some basswood, there's some oak trees, and trying to encourage those species so that we have a lot of different eggs there, because we never know what the next threat's going to be.
Right. Who can people go to for help?
Yeah, so, you know, what kind of resources are there for people? They can contact our office, and we have an office in Duluth, or you can contact the Soil and Water office here in Two Harbors, and they can put you in touch with us. Myself and my staff are able to go out and meet with landowners and develop conservation plans, as is Minnesota DNR does have a private forester up in Eveleth, and his name is Roger Nelson. He may be a resource for people as well. But what we try and do is give people alternatives, develop that conservation plan, and then through the Federal Farm Bill, we do have financial assistance to help people hire a crew, a contractor, and we have a list of contractors that do some of this work that can come in and take these trees down And then we do another stand evaluation to see if we need to do some supplemental tree planting underneath there. So, okay. There are some resources for people. So. Yeah.
Are there any acreage limits for landowners who are interested in participating in your program?
There really isn't an acreage limit in terms of a minimum or a maximum. My agency, we are a little bit unique for a federal agency in that we only work on private land. So that's one of the things. So, you know, the non-industrial private forest land in the county and the state and the federal land, we don't do any work on. Though we can't do landscaping type projects, so it has to be, in order to be eligible for our programs, it has to be, forest land that is capable of growing trees. So we kind of work outside the yard or a little bit offset from the shoreline if we're along Lake Superior. I should mention, though, also that there are private foresters, too, that can come out and work with landowners. And we do have a few of those. And the office here in Two Harbors, the Soil and Water District office, does have a list of those folks that are also available because we have a little bit of a backlog. Those private foresters are able to go out and meet with people on a little bit quicker time frame. And they can also submit plans to us that we can use to apply for funding to treat.
Can people purchase and apply chemicals to their trees themselves to prevent budworm damage?
I would recommend that people talk to like an arborist or a tree care expert if they're thinking about applying chemicals. Mm-hmm. Some chemicals you can buy sort of over the counter or like at a hardware store. But others are kind of what we call restricted use chemicals that have to be applied by a professional who's been trained to apply them.
Yeah.
So a good source of information if people are really interested in saving a tree or a group of particular trees would probably be to contact a tree care specialist or a chemical dealer that sells those chemicals, and they'd be able to help them with that.
I'm wondering, to which part of the tree the chemical is applied? Like, if it needs to be applied to the top of the tree, how could that be accessed?
I think that's part of the problem, because it's not systemic. It's not like emerald ash borer you actually inject it into the tree, because the emerald ash borer beetle feeds on the inside of the bark, that living part of the tree, whereas this is a defoliant, and I think that's part of why it's not maybe as effective, because you have to actually cover the tree, and if it rains a lot, then you have to probably do multiple applications.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess, what is the long-term strategy to deal with this pest?
So long-term strategies, we recommend that people work with a forester or a conservationist to develop a long-term management plan for their property. And, you know, we have all kinds of threats right now. You know, there's natural species like spruce budworm. There's invasive species like emerald ash borer and gypsy moth and even white pine blister rust. And then you add in things like climate change and fragmentation of forest habitat. There's just a lot of, I'll call them challenges out there on the landscape. And so part of the solution for all of those challenges is the same, and that is to increase diversity and go in, because we've taken away a lot of the natural disturbances that occur, like fire. We want to go in a managed, prescribed way so that we can grow the healthiest trees possible. So diversify, keep them healthy, and that'll help you cover all of those bases. And there's probably other threats that we don't even know about yet. And so we've kind of, I think we are doing a better job lately than maybe in the past of, you know, we've kind of, I like to believe that we're learning that we need to manage more for diversity and manage to kind of work with the ecosystem instead of, you know, well, I want red pine, and so I'm going to have a pure stand, a red pine plantation, or I want just white pine, so I'm going to do just white pine. I think we're doing a better job of learning that, you know, having all these different tree species all on the same landscape is an important mm-hmm. important factor. And then using management so that sometimes we don't even have to plant the trees. I always say, well, what does this forest want to be? And instead of kind of projecting what I want it to be, kind of work with it to maybe speed it up in a one direction or another direction, but kind of work with it so that getting those trees established isn't so difficult mm-hmm. for people.
What if it wants to be buckthorn?
And that's, you know, and that's another good point, though, is, you know, we have these invasive woody species like buckthorn and non-woody species like garlic mustard and all these different things. And again, by making or creating conditions for those trees to be as healthy as possible, we kind of mitigate for some of that risk that those species will become established. Because they're really opportunists, and they come in to an unhealthy stand, you know, where maybe the birch trees, the paper birch, are at the end of their lifespan. They're starting to fall down. The canopy's opening up to more light. And with the absence of management, the understory shade-loving trees like white pine, cedar, yellow birch aren't there to take their place. And so the buckthorn is able to just jump in there and take advantage of that and take off. And once they get a foothold, then it's really hard to go back and change it.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time here, so I would like to thank you very much, Will, for joining me today.
And thanks for having us. And I always tell folks, you know, we've got a great resource here at the Soil and Water District office and our office, and we're happy to talk to people, even if it doesn't involve a site visit. Encourage people to call the questions they might have. Our phone number is 218-720-5209, extension 3.
All right. Thanks again. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in to another episode of Conservation Corner on 99.5 FM, KTWH-LP, Two Harbors, Minnesota. Conservation Corner is produced by Lake County Soil and Water Conservation District with funds from the Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Amendment. I'm Emily Nelson, and I hope you have a wonderful afternoon.